Special Rapporteur, thank you so much for agreeing to talk with me today.
Thank you very much for wanting to talk with me.
Today you've done your press conference in Australia after your preliminary findings. One of the main focuses of your mission has been justice and detention issues of women and children. In your statement today, you say that Australia, that this is a major human rights concern in Australia. What institutions did you visit that indicated this was so?
I went to the Cleveland Youth Detention Center in Townsville. I also went to the Bandiya prison in Perth. You know, and I spoke with the people who were detained in those centers, and it's really a very serious concern for me, you know, because young people, very young people, have been there, were arrested on very flimsy reasons, and they keep on going back. The recidivism is very high. So the one person said she has been back 17 times.
And what type of things have they been sent to these jails for?
Well, first, there one person said that he just stole a fruit. Another person, another young person, said that he was sleeping in the trash bin, and then they found him. Another one, I mean, yelling at police officers. You know, those are the kinds of things that they are brought to jail for.
And why do you think they're doing this?
Well, I really think there's racism, I think, you know. I mean, the police officers are trained to really think the worst of these people, and they think that punitive measures are the approaches that can be, that should be used against them. So I guess it's really an embedded kind of racism against Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander people.
And did you discuss this with Australian government officials?
Yes, I discussed this with the police. I have meetings with the heads of those institutions, and I recommended a lot of things in terms of the mandatory sentencing. Why do you sentence him? And what are the diversionary programs, the diversion programs that they do? And one said that they are training them to be chefs. And I asked, so how many are now employed in the restaurants? And they said they don't know. You know, so I think that the sustainability of some of the programs that they're doing is really questionable, because, you know, you give these trainings, but you don't support them all the way to get really productive jobs and, you know, and have a life. You know, so what do you expect? Of course, they keep on coming back.
And when you talk about women and girls, did you see this with women and girls in the prisons as well?
I did see that as well. In fact, in that youth prison, I saw a young woman who is pregnant. No, and in the Bandiya women's prison, the prisoners told me that first of all, they are so worried about health, because when they get sick, you know, they are not referred immediately to a specialist. So there was somebody who said that he had a stomach pains, and it up to now she has it, and she hasn't been referred to. So even the health services in those institutions are really quite, you know, very inadequate.
And were you surprised that in a country like Australia that this was happening?
I'm surprised, because a country like Australia, which is so rich, you know, cannot provide those kinds of services. I mean, it's like, for me, it's unthinkable. Of course, I saw the detention centers. They look very nice compared to what we have in the Philippines, for instance. But still, you know, the people are very, you know, the desperation, you can hear it in the voices. I asked them, what future do you see for yourself? And they look at you, said, what future? You know, and that's really, I think, the saddest thing that I've seen so far.
And the percentages of Indigenous peoples in these jails, when we're discussing these women and girls, is it a larger percentage of Indigenous women and girls that are going through these?
Yes, conditions? Definitely in the Bandiya prison, 95% of the detainees are Indigenous, Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islanders. There are very few white women there. So there's really a very disproportionate representation of these people in the detention centers.
And so what do you call on the government to do about this?
Well, first of all, I think that they really have to address, they have to develop comprehensive, you know, programs that will deal with the issue of poverty, of violence, of, you know, this drug syndicates going into their communities. You know, clearly there are all these different factors that that lead to that kind of situation. And they should develop these kinds of holistic programs, and they should also be sensitized about the cultural, you know, specificities of these indigenous people, so that they will understand better why it's so important for them to have a sense of community, to have a family that takes care of them afterwards. Because that's one of the issues. They said they don't know where to go because they came from foster homes. Mm. No?
But does this sort of sound a little colonial to you?
It's very colonial. It's very patronizing, you know. It's like the government knows best what these people should do. So it's basically imposing a very punitive system upon them.
And when you talk to the Aboriginal communities, which you've done in Australia, what do they say about racism? What perceptions do you pick up from their ideas of racism that happens
well,
to them?
They really felt very strongly that they are subjected to all kinds of racism, both from the state institutions as well as from the dominant society. You know, they feel that they are misrepresented in the media. It's like they are criminals, they are alcoholics, they are welfare profiteers, you know, as if there's nothing good about them. You know, and I think that's really what is so worrying, because of course there are many good Aboriginal people. We know of Aboriginal people and Torres Strait Islanders who have really been professionals. They are very good. They are doing the best they can. But that's the kind of picture that you see in the media.
So when you're speaking about the media, do you think that the media should have some sort of training?
I think so. There should be training for the media in terms of how to be more understanding about Indigenous people's realities. There should be training for the police force, so that they will not just arrest anybody on flimsy ground. And of course the judges. You know, I went to the Koori Court actually in Melbourne, and I thought that was a very good approach.
The Koori Court being the Indigenous Court?
The children's court, yes, where the elders are brought in, the families are brought in, and they have a discussion. They are like on a family table talking about the problem of the child talking about what are the options that this child has. And I think that's a good thing, but it doesn't exist in all the states.
And one last thing I'd like to talk to you about, and that's about child removals. Mm-hmm. What did you find out about that?
Well, really, I found out that there's a big number of child removals in many of these communities. In fact, many of the prisoners I spoke with in Bandiap said that their biggest fear is when they go out, they cannot take back their children anymore. You know, because of course they have this record, and so if they are sent to child protection systems, then they will not be able to get back their kids. You know, so that's one issue. The other issue is that clearly the majority of the kids who are in prison came from this child protection system, from the foster homes. So I heard a lot of also, you know, maltreatment of these people when they are staying with their foster families. And apparently it's like a business, you know, where you agree to adopt or to at least to host a child. And then you get a lot of resources for it as well. But in terms of what is given to the kids, and in terms of them being feeling that they are a member of a family, it's like almost nothing. There's nothing like that.
So just one last question. I know I said the last one was, but you travel the world. Mm. This is your mandate. Mm. Why are we still having these conversations? Why is it so difficult for Indigenous people to be heard and to be respected and have the same rights as everyone else? We're in 2017.
Well, I think there's still a lot of embedded racism, no, in the dominant societies. I mean, there's this feeling that, you know, in the past they were colonized and they were treated as savages. And that's still the story up till now. It's like Indigenous peoples don't have their own agency to be able to do things for themselves. And the government has to be the one deciding, you know, what they should do.
Is this a global phenomenon?
Well, I think it's a global phenomenon, you know. The moment the state takes over these functions and doesn't allow these Indigenous peoples to really practice, you know, and operationalize self-determination, then that's the kind of story that you see.
Is there an element of fear?
There's an element of fear, I think. What is because, of course, many indigenous peoples, they live in lands and territories which are very rich in resources, and there's a competition between the desire of government to take hold of these resources and use it for their own interests or for the interests of corporations they are working with. So that's one. But there's also a fear that, you know, especially in settler societies, that if the indigenous peoples are empowered, they might not treat the dominant population in the right way. You know, so there's also fear, and I think a lot of lack of empathy, you know, in terms of redressing the injustice, you know, that's there, and in terms of considering them as part of the community, part of the nation state, and therefore it's in their best interest to bring them, to include them, to allow them to participate in their own terms, so that the nation will develop as a nation, you know, and not be having all these inequalities that are reinforced more and more.
So if getting back to Australia, what would be your message to the Australian government after if you had to narrow it down, what would your message be to the Australian government?
I think that my message is that the Australian government should really, truly respect the right of Indigenous peoples to self-determination, which means the right to define or decide what their political status is, as well as the right to determine freely their economic, social, and cultural development. And this also means the right to participate in the decisions and programs that are going to affect them directly, and the right to have their consent obtained if some projects are being brought to their territories that will directly affect their communities. That's the right to self-determination, and clearly that is the right that's most violated, and that's why we have all these problems that are like symptoms of the fact that that right is not recognized. Their equality and non-discrimination, which are the basic principles for human rights, are not really practiced as far as Indigenous peoples are concerned.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.